show that is all baseball.
They're better than they were a year ago.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork, Bigelow Tea, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Zing Zang Cocktail in a Can, Wind Waste Innovations, and Woodbridge Wines.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ground ball to Bregman, that should do it. And this was all Houston tonight. 9 runs in the second. Yuke, and they ran away with it.
Yeah, tough one there. I mean, throw away that inning. But on the offensive side, you know, 12 guys left in base, or now 13 left on base. But, hey, swinging the bat's good. Stick with that. Hopefully get a better pitching performance tomorrow.
And Red Sox now 13 games behind the New York Yankees.
Well, it is what it is, as they say, 13 games out of first place. Not that you should be focusing on that. What I would focus is where the last wild card spot is. It's about 6.5, I think, the last time I checked. It's somewhere in that area. So the Red Sox can get hot at some point. Maybe they can actually re-enter the race. But in any case, 617-779-0985 is the number here on the Baseball Hour. We will be with you until 7 o'clock tonight. In fact, 6 to 7 pretty much every night now for the balance of the baseball season, for however long that is. No matter how long the Red Sox play, we will be with you here Monday through Friday on the Baseball Hour. Jared Karabas of DraftKings will join us here momentarily. In fact, I think he's already joined via Zoom. Jared, are you there?
I'm here, Tony.
Okay, so there you go. So before we begin, Jared, let me get this part off my chest, and I don't necessarily put you in this group. I just know that Red Sox fans in general fed me a lot of this crap earlier in the year. And when I say this crap, I always say, when it comes to the baseball season, Jared, I believe in fast starts, strong finishes. I think it's really important. A bad start can bury a team, and I think that that is what has happened with this club. And the reason why I bring it up now is because I can't tell you how many people said to me, why are you worrying it's early? Yeah, it's early, Maz. Why are you worrying? You're panicking. Don't panic. It's too early. They got a lot of time left. Now they're 13 games out of first place. They're buried in the division. They're eight games, whatever it is, under 500. And here's the real point. They've played better in the last week. They split with the Braves. They took 2 out of 3 in Texas. They won the first game against the Astros. And I start to think, well, here it is. They're coming out of it. Then they get absolutely freaking pasted last night at Fenway Park. And it sort of pushes you back again. And the lesson is, or the message is, this is why you don't want to bury yourself. Because it's hard to get out. It's hard to get out and to win games. And you have a tendency to look at it and say, well, if you're 8 games under, you win 8 in a row and you get right back in it, as the saying goes. Not that easy to do. Once you bury yourself 8, 9 games under 500, to get out of that can take weeks, months sometimes. So anyway, for those of you who tried to shove that in my face, this is what I was trying to tell you. But again, I'm negative Nancy. I'm always preaching the worst case scenario of everything, and so I'm the a-hole. I get it. As it pertains to the Red Sox, Jared, I have a big picture question for you. This is something I've started to really consider in greater depth the last couple of nights, because again, it's not like the Red Sox are in the race at the moment. Where do you think this is all going, Jared? And when I say that, I mean, Sam Kennedy made a comment at the end of last season about how the Red Sox wanted to rebuild themselves at every level throughout the minor leagues and also in the big leagues, and they were going to stick to their plan and it wasn't going to change one bit. Okay, that was the comment he basically made at the end of the season. Is that going to work? You follow me? In other words, do you believe that that sort of plan can work?
What's the plan? What is the Red Sox plan right now?
Okay, because, so maybe that's an even better question, Jared. So go ahead.
Yeah, so the way that I look at it is when Chaim Bloom first got here, and there was all the Red Sox are turning into the Rays and this and that, I wanted everyone to pump the brakes on that because the Mookie Betts trade, the Red Sox were trying to get under the luxury tax threshold, and we all understand the business of baseball in that regard. And then another year goes by and there's no big free agent signings. So it's like, okay, all right, well, that seems more on the Rays side of things than the Dodgers side of things, which is what the Red Sox were capable of becoming, which would be a team with deep pockets. But the baseball IQ of the Tampa Bay Rays, that would be the Dodgers. And now I kind of get to the point where there is no luxury tax threshold restrictions that should be preventing you from making a decision like paying Rafael Devers, paying Xander Bogaerts, things like that. So that's where I run into the issue of what is your philosophy if you're going to go out there and say, this is not, we're not trying to turn the Boston Red Sox into the Tampa Bay Rays. All right, I believe you, but now show me that. And that's kind of where we're at a crossroads now. I guess that ties back into the Xander Bogaerts situation in terms of team philosophy. Like, where do we go from here?
Okay, and I'll tell you what, Jared, we'll get to Bogaerts in the next segment. And again, I'll tell everyone, 617-779-0985. Obviously, we're in the unique circumstance tonight of going against the game. So the Red Sox are starting momentarily here, but we all know baseball is a game that does not have a lot of action. So if you want to click over, to us, if you want to stay with us, we'll let you know when something notable happens in the game. And in the interim, I really think the discussion with the Red Sox now is more about the big picture, at least or until they get back in the race. And so when you say, what is the goal? I'm sort of, this is what I'm getting at, Jared. To win a championship, okay, and I'll go back to, and I've always said, I want the Red Sox to do both. I want the Red Sox to win championships and build a farm system. I think because they are a big market team, they should be able to do both. They should be able to sign free agents to win the here and now and draft and sign, you know, international free agents and develop well enough to keep the engine running for a long, long time. They basically did that during the Theo Epstein years. Those years from 2002 through 2011, and Theo became the GM in 2003, but let's just call it the 10-year sample. During that span of time, the Red Sox basically won 95 games a year. They won a couple of World Series. They went to four LCSs, I think it was. And they were the winningest team in baseball, which is something we all loved. So now, but there were sacrifices made along the way. That's how the whole bridge year term got coined. In 2006, the Red Sox only won 86 games. But they didn't suck like they suck now. And they had other quote-unquote bridge years along the way there where they didn't make the playoffs. 2009-2010, one of those years, I think they won 89 games. But again, they didn't suck the way they suck now. They were a disappointment, but they weren't a complete non-factor. And I think part of the reason is that they were able to sign and spend and also at the same time develop. And you're going to have little holes in there that prevent you from being great in that period of time. Are you now confident that this team will go the extra mile to put itself over the top when it's in position to win a championship?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No, I'm not. And I think like what we were kind of like talking before the show of, you know, like the way that you phrased it was, What do you think the Red Sox want to be as an organization long term? My answer to that was profitable. I think that they don't want to be a top five spending team. They don't want to be the Dodgers. They don't want to be the Yankees or what the Mets have become now. I think that they kind of look. It doesn't for me feel like they want to be a bottom third of Major League Baseball in spending. I think they probably look at it as, hey, you're the smart guy. You built winners. You built consistent and sustained winners in Tampa. Why don't you come here and do that? And we can help you out along the way if you want to go out there and spend money on a Trevor Story or whatever it is. But you can build winners without having to blow past the luxury tax threshold and then put us in a position to where we now have to trade the face of the franchise to the Dodgers, who immediately get an extension somewhere else. I think that's probably what we're headed towards.
Okay, so Jared, there's a reason I ask you all this. Okay, it's not just because the Red Sox are losing. There were some comments made in the last day or so by Bruce Cassidy of the Bruins, oddly enough. I said this last night, but I said it later in the show, so I want to revisit it for some of the people that might be listening earlier in the program tonight. Bruce Cassidy made a comment during Bruins exit interviews yesterday that I want to play for people when we come back, because I do think it relates to the Red Sox. Okay, we'll do that when we come back on the Baseball Hour with Jared Karabas of DraftKings.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, we talked a lot at spring training about trying to build up this organization at every level while trying to compete at the major league level. And thanks to the group sitting to my left, we were able to do that. I think Alex said it well. There's a lot of unfinished business. No one's celebrating. But I think this year was a validation of our organizational plan and our strategy, which is to continue to build a robust organization at every single level, win at every level, and remain committed to the major league level. And our fans responded well to that, players responded well to that, and that's going to be where we're going. So in terms of the organizational place, in terms of where we are, that holds true, and we're not going to deviate from that plan one bit.
So that's a comment, again, that Sam Kennedy made at the end of last season. We're not going to deviate from that plan one bit. We're going to win at every level. We're going to have a robust farm system. And we are going to compete. Okay, which, again, I might have put compete in his mouth, but I did not put it in the mouth of Chaim Bloom. So Bloom said stuff like this a million times last year. And again, Jared Karabas of DraftKings is with us via Zoom today. So, Jared, just let me play these two cuts quickly. This was Chaim Bloom. Jimmy, when did Bloom say this? Was this back at the trading deadline last year? It was at some point last season, right?
Sounds right. The deadline sounds right.
Okay. So, again, and this is a common message from Bloom. Okay. He says this pretty much repeatedly. It's consistent with what Sam Kennedy said. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I still think we have to keep our goal in mind of making sure that the biggest goal, I think the biggest obligation we have to our fans is to make sure we are as good as possible for as long as possible, and to be able to get to the point where we can compete for a World Series every year and stay there.
Okay, as good as possible for as long as possible and compete for a World Series every year and stay there. That's what he said. Now, I told you, Bruce Cassidy, the Bruins, on his exit interview yesterday, was talking about the Bruins losing to Carolina in the first round. He said this.
To say we weren't a contender, I think, yeah, if you don't get out of the first round, you know, that's not what we want. We want to win a Stanley Cup. That's what we're here for.
Okay, so look, Jared, it's a really subtle thing, okay? But Cassidy says, point blank, we want to win a Stanley Cup. That's why we're here. The Red Sox say we want to be as good as we can for as long as we can and compete for a Stanley or compete for a World Series, right? They say compete for a World Series every year. Bruce Cassidy says we want to win a Stanley Cup. Are those two things the same, Jared?
They're not the same, no. But I do think that that's what Chaim meant. I don't think that he's satisfied. Like, Chaim may be, he may come off as a bit of a nerd, but his competitive energy is very high. I don't know how to explain it. He has almost like that athletic competitive nature inside of an executive's body.
Okay. And Jared, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that. Is he willing to make the kind of move that is necessary maybe to win a championship? You know, and again, let's go back to the trading deadline of last year. When, in other words, sometimes at the deadline, Jared, you have to lose a trade to win a championship. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay. Do you think they're willing to do that? Do you think he's willing to do that?
I think that the odds are against that.
Okay. So again, so this is
if it were up to Heim.
Okay. So Jared, this is what I'm getting at. Okay. This is what I'm getting at. Is the goal to just be good every year and be profitable, which is what you said in the last segment. So I'm not arguing with you. I'm having the discussion with you. Okay. Is the goal to be profitable every year? And let's hang around. Let's make the playoffs. And then we'll see what happens. If we're good enough, if we're good every year and we're knocking on the door, sooner or later, we'll win a world championship. Fine. The Bruins tried that for about 35 years. It didn't work. Okay, the Bruins tried that for about 35 years, and it didn't work. And you know what? So did the Red Sox, except they tried it a lot longer. They did it for about 86 years, and that you have to go the extra mile sometimes, oftentimes, to win a championship. So even when Theo Epstein got here and inherited a good team, and even though he was a young GM, you know what they did between 2003 and 2004? They went out and got Curt Schilling, and they went out and signed Keith Foulke. They made two big moves, bookends on their pitching staff, that were short-term moves. Short-term to win a championship. And as much as I talk about Bloom all the time, the real decision comes from ownership. They hired Bloom knowing what Bloom was and how Bloom would run it. So if ownership is at a point where they just want to turn a profit, they want a good team that'll be 90 wins every year and make the playoffs. Is that going to get it done? In your mind, is that going to get it done?
No, I think that you're 100% right about having to go the extra mile. Specifically in baseball, you have to do that. And it doesn't always work out. I think that we've seen that as well. But I'm trying to think of, like, even just in this short window of time, what would have been the go the extra mile move? Like if I told you right now, the Red Sox traded for Max Scherzer at the trade deadline last year, that would have been looked at as a complete failure because he would have ran out of gas at the end like he did last year. And then you would have given up God knows what. I mean, because that was also the trade that Trey Turner was included in. So that package was obviously bigger. You would have lost more, and then Scherzer would have just walked in and signed with the Mets. I'm trying to think of, like, what all-in move could the Red Sox have made.
So let me give you one, Jared. Okay, let me give you one. And that, because I would argue that last year they weren't at the same position they are now. Last year at the beginning of the season, their farm system was still ranked relatively low. They hadn't had the draft yet. And I know the draft came before the trading deadline last year, but nonetheless, my point is, by the end of the season last year, they had had a good year, a surprising year. They had established themselves as being quote-unquote back. And their farm system, I think, had crept into the top 10 in Baseball America's talent rankings, okay, which is a big jump. And then early in the year, they were in the 20s. And by the end of the year, between Garrett Whitlock and Marcelo Mayer and some of the other kids in the system, Jed York, Blaze Jordan, whoever else, that the stock of their system had gone up considerably. So I would have argued coming into this year is when the change happened. It didn't happen during the year. I didn't love their trade deadline a year ago, mostly because I wanted a first baseman. But I did not want a big expenditure at the deadline. I didn't want Max Scherzer. But during the offseason, in retrospect, let me ask you now, could you have signed Freddie Freeman?
I feel like we had this conversation before. I don't know that I would have wanted Freddie Freeman, knowing that you have Tristan Cassis on the way. And after, I mean, I know that you're not a big Bobby Dalbec guy, but what he did in the second half last year, I think that that was the evaluation that they made, was that, okay, was he as bad as he was in the first half? No. Was he as good as he was in the second half? No. But if we can get a guy that's somewhere in the middle, is that suitable enough? Yeah, sure. Until Cassis gets here. And then you worry about what to do with Bobby after that. I think that was the assessment that they made. Freddie Freeman's a great player, but he's 32 going on 33. And you have one of the top prospects in baseball at that position that's coming up.
Okay. So, but again, you understand what I'm saying now is that this is the kind of stuff. It's a short-term move. And I'm not even saying for 1 year. So Trevor Story was signed for not that much money different than Freddie Freeman. Trevor Story got 6 and 140. Freeman got 6 and 160. Is that right? Was it a $20 million difference over 6 years? It's about $3.3 million per, if I remember right. So the difference in those two players is not that great. And the exact thing you're talking about, though, Jared, is what they thought. And this is what I'm getting back to about the short-term thinking. So if you sign Freddie Freeman, you say, well, we got Cassis coming. Well, at the end of the year, you're losing J.D. Martinez. Why can't Cassis be the DH?
Why are you losing J.D., though?
Because he's a free agent.
Out of all the players that are free agents, J.D. is the only one to openly express that he wants to stay here.
So you don't think Xander Bogaerts wants to stay here?
I don't. I'm not saying that he does or he doesn't, but he hasn't openly said that he does.
Oh, I think he's made it clear over the course of his career, though, Jared, that he wants to stay here. Don't you?
Sure, but has he said that?
Okay, but again, so but I don't.
I'm just saying you can't factor in J.D. Martinez as a loss after this year when he has openly said, "Hey, I want to play 2-3 more years and I want to retire with the Red Sox."
Yeah, I don't look at J.D. Martinez the same way as I would look at Xander. You're going to lose some guys, Jared. You're not going to be able to keep everybody. And all I'm saying is, I just don't see if I add in what you're saying at first base with Hunter Renfro. Okay, I'll tell you what. Hold the thought, because I want to ask you a question as it pertains to Hunter Renfro. The bottom line is, I think the Red Sox whiffed on the right side of the diamond this year as it pertains to Renfro and Dahlbeck both. Okay, and I'll tell you why when we come back with Jared Carabas here on the Baseball Hour.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now, more baseball and more Mavs.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mavs on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I don't know the answer to this question. I know what you will answer to this question, but I will ask. Are there negotiations going on between you and Xander?
You know that I wouldn't talk about that. You already knew that when you asked.
I did.
But look, you know, in all seriousness with this, I think I understand, you know, obviously we didn't come to any sort of extension agreement before the season. I think the important thing is we know Xander wants to be here. We want him to be here. We don't have an agreement yet, but we're trying to stay focused on the task at hand, and you know, that's what we're all doing, and we know where everybody wants us to end up, and you know, we've got time to see what happens there.
Ty and Bloom last night on Nesson talking about Xander Bogaerts, who, by the way, is homered again. Homered in the first inning after a Rafael Devers triple. Talk about good timing. The two guys who are unsigned, one triples and scores on a sac fly. Bogaerts hits the homer. But Ty and Bloom again talking about Xander Bogaerts, indicating the Red Sox want to sign him. Xander wants to remain with the club. Jared, I want to take a couple of calls here quickly, but do you believe him when he says that?
Do I believe who? Bogaerts said he wants to stay?
No, Chaim Bloom, that the Red Sox want to keep him.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do. If the rumors were true about what the actual offer was before the season, then no. That wasn't a serious offer. They should have not even made an offer at all.
Yeah, so look, I think they want to keep him. The question is, how far are they willing to go to do it? So
if the AAV is $27 million and it's going to take you 7 years, or if you want to bump up the AAV and knock it down to six, whatever it is, whatever it takes, there's no excuse to not sign Xander Bogaerts to a contract. If you hear everyone in the clubhouse saying that this is the guy that you have to make an investment in, he wants to stay here, he's won 2 championships here. It's just too reminiscent of the past when they want to pay people from the outside to come in that can't perform, and they don't want to reward the people that came here and performed. I don't understand it.
Yeah, look, I Jared, again, I don't get it either. But to me, it makes perfect sense. Let's take a couple of calls. Nick's in Westport on the Red Sox and Connor Siebold, I think he wants to talk about. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, Maz. Yeah, it's a little bit of a random thing. I did want to know from you guys what if you know anything about them calling up Siebold as soon as possible, because I would like to see him. I know he's been doing good down in the minors, down in AAA. But the other thing I want to know real quick is what do you guys think if they do decide to keep Bogaerts and Devers, what are the odds that guys might actually want to start coming here and they like kind of
okay,
like
Nick, I'm going to stop you there because again, I think that sort of gets into a whole different discussion. Let's stick with Siebold to start. Jared, do you think we're going to see Connor Siebold soon?
That's what I would do, but that's because I want Garrett Whitlock in the back end of the bullpen. I don't know, like if he comes up here, whose spot is he going to take? Is Michael Walker's injury worse than we thought? Is the setback with Chris Sale worse than we thought? I don't know where he would fit, but that's what I would do, something like that. Yes, but the goal would be to put Whitlock in the bullpen, and I don't think that that's what they're going to do.
Okay, so let me ask you another question, because again, and for those who don't remember, Siebold was one of the other guy they got in the deal with Nick Pivetta from Philadelphia when they made a deadline deal with them a couple of years ago, and that was who? Brandon Workman and
Heath Hembree.
Heath Hembree, that's what I thought. Okay, those two, they got back at the time. And look, Pivetta's turned out okay. You know, certainly, I would say all in all, the deal's a win because you gave up nothing in the deal. And Siebold has pitched well. So now let me jump back a few days. Sunday, they had a game in Texas where the Red Sox went with a bullpen game with Austin Davis in that game. And Davis did fine. Tanner Houck did fine. But ultimately, we got to Ryan Brazier. And, you know, the horse left the barn. They lost the game. But in lieu of a bullpen game, could they or should they have called up Siebold to pitch that game on Sunday, Jared?
I mean, it feels like revisionist history at this point.
But there were people at the time who said that, who thought that Siebold might come up and pitch that game.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I want him up here regardless. But obviously my intentions are a little bit different. Yeah. I think that he has earned the right to get a look on this roster, given what they're rolling out there.
Okay, let's go to Jacobs in a car on the offseason moves of the Red Sox. Go ahead, Jacob.
Hey, how's it going? So what I think is that they expected Dahlbeck to take a step forward offensively and defensively, and that hasn't been the case this year. And that they would lose offense with Bradley in right field as opposed to Renfro, but with the Trevor Story signing, that hasn't panned out as well. So wouldn't you think you would place more blame on the players for their lack of production?
Okay, so again, look, the players always take part of the blame. I'm not exempting the players, but the Dahlbeck one does introduce a different question to me, Jared. And look, I know he played better in the second half of last year. There were a lot of people that I thought Dahlbeck was on the verge of something big. There were also people who thought, well, now's a good time to maybe move Dahlbeck. So, for example, in the last segment, Jared, you talked about Tristan Cassis. If they had Tristan Cassis coming, and they do, why do they need Bobby Dahlbeck? So could they?
Well, I mean, he's a natural third baseman, and I think one of the things that we talked about before the season started was that I wanted to see him in the outfield, and I think you started to make that point before the last break about Hunter Renfro, Jackie Bradley Jr. Jackie Bradley Jr. at the time of the trade was expected to be a fourth outfielder. We didn't expect Jackie Bradley Jr. to be playing every single day.
Correct.
And then they tried Christian Arroyo out there, a man without a position, before they tried Bobby Dahlbeck out there. And we keep hearing about the athletic ability of Bobby Dahlbeck. And I think he'd be able to figure it out. So I think that was one of those things where you would have been forced to figure it out if he was still the offensive threat that he was in the second half of last year, but now he's just losing playing time to Franchi Cordero.
Okay, so I see. So your idea is to put Dahlbeck in right field over the longer term.
Sure. I mean, I think that if you really wanted to keep him, which, I mean, I don't know what you would fetch for him at this particular moment in time with what he's done this season. But yeah, I think coming into this year, I was really confused why that wasn't something that they took a look at.
Okay, so what? See, now I look at it differently than you. I'm not telling you wrong to think that he could play the outfield. I would say left more than right, Jared. Just my two cents. Right field at Fenway is a big area, as we know. And as athletic as Dahlbeck is, right field's a big ask. Okay,
and they put Christian Arroyo out there.
Okay, and I don't like that one either. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was right. It's just, yeah. I mean, if you would look at the no offense to Christian Arroyo, if you look at the bodies and the athletic builds there, I would say that Bobby would have been the more logical option.
Yeah. Now look, you want to tell me you want to put Verdugo in right and play Dahlbeck in left? Whatever, we can play that game. But
sure.
But the ultimate point is that you believed in Bobby Dahlbeck's offense. I did not. They have Tristan Casas coming. So either way, Dahlbeck's leaving first base. Given the way that it has gone, don't you think we can now look back and say, why didn't you move Dahlbeck during the offseason? And this is, to me, how it relates to Renfro. That they looked at Hunter Renfro and they said, well, the guy hit 30 home runs and got basically 100 RBI. And he was a Gold Glove finalist. Not that that was legit, because I thought he was way overrated as a defensive outfielder. And I think most of us would agree on that now. But they tried to sell Renfro high. Why not do the same with Dahlbeck?
If they were to do that, who's playing first base on opening day? Okay. I'm not saying, I mean, obviously it got to a point where he's not your everyday first baseman anyway by mid-May. But to start the year, was anyone talking about Franchy Cordero as a first base option?
No. But this is why I say go back, and why can't you sign yourself a free agent to play first base and trade Dahlbeck for some pitching, or trade Hunter Renfro for some pitching? Jared, this is all my way of saying. For example, when I talk about Renfro, it's not the part of trading Renfro that bothers me. What bothers me is trading him for prospects that are part of the long-term plan and not the short-term plan. If you had traded, especially at a time where their minor league system had already gotten to the stage where, and again, I think you and I are in agreement on this part of it. So I'm not trying to lecture you. I know it sounds that way that I'm lecturing you, but I'm really not. My concern is with the Red Sox putting an emphasis on the long-term over the short. Okay, so now Bobby Dahlbeck's a young player. You're more inclined to keep him than you are Hunter Renfro. I get that. I also think that you could have signed a veteran first baseman. It didn't have to be Freddie Freeman. Okay, there are, you know, and I'm just throwing the name out because it's convenient and it's easy. But Rizzo got 2-32 from the Yankees. Okay, so you could have signed a stopgap at first base, even, you know, with the idea that Casas is coming along. You could have maximized Dahlbeck's value, gotten something to help this big league club, really sacrificed nothing in the long term because you have Casas coming, right? So it's not like you're giving up your first baseman of the future, and you could have helped this club this year. But the real reason they didn't do it is because Dahlbeck's young, and they see 4 years of relatively cheap production there, assuming he hit like he did at the end of last year. And you know, they chose the long term over the short, which to me was a mistake. And I'll say the same thing about right field. If you want to trade Hunter Renfro, fine. No problem. I'm no huge Hunter Renfro fan. But at the same time, I would tell you, why did you then take on the contract of Jackie Bradley and two players in A ball when you didn't need to do that kind of deal at that time? You're not the Tampa Bay Rays. You could have traded Hunter Renfro for some bullpen help or whatever and signed Seiya Suzuki to play right field. So my issue is that it just feels to me like every time Bloom is faced with the decision of short-term versus long, he chooses the long every single time. And I don't know that you can win World Series if you keep doing it that way. And I mean, maybe you agree, maybe you don't, but I think you agree.
For the most part, I agree. I think the one thing that you would look at last year would have been trading for Kyle Schwarber. That's a short-term move. You're trading for a guy that, if it pans out, if he comes over here and he becomes the impact bat coming off of an injury that you expect him to be, he's probably going to fetch a nice little penny in free agency, and it's probably not going to be from you. And that's exactly what happened.
Okay, and I would just say that I agree with you on Schwarber. It's a fair thing to bring up. I would also tell you that they paid less on Schwarber than they might have paid otherwise because he was injured at the time. And also, I would argue that Schwarber didn't really fill their need a year ago. He filled their need for a lefty bat, but they still didn't have a first baseman, Jared.
I mean, he played first base, maybe not well, but that was the position that he occupied.
Okay, well, what's the point of playing first base if you're not going to play it well? Why not put him in center field?
Was he a defensive liability then?
Yes.
No. Yes. Did they lose games because Kyle Schwarber was the first baseman?
Their first base defense sucked all year. It sucked all year. It got a little bit better in the second half.
Did they lose games because Kyle Schwarber was their first baseman?
Yes.
No, they didn't.
Yes,
they won games because Kyle Schwarber was their first baseman. When he went over there to play first base because he had nowhere else to go because you had your outfield set and they insisted on putting JD in the outfield a decent amount, you had a guy that was essentially without a defensive position. He went over there, did an okay job. He wasn't outstanding. He wasn't great. It wasn't flashy. He was serviceable and you needed his bat in that lineup. And when he joined that lineup, it changed the entire dynamic. And that's when they lit a fire under Bobby Dalbec and that changed everything. It made the lineup so much longer just by having him there.
Yeah. Again, so you asked me, did they lose games by having him at first base? I like the bat too. I like the hitter, but they had him put him in a position that he can't play. Fact,
could you name one game that they lost where it was like, yeah, that was because of that play that Kyle Schwarber made at first?
I'd have to go back and look, but I would tell you overall that their defense at first base was a negative. Their defense at first base was a negative. They were one of the worst defensive teams in baseball.
I'm not saying he's good. I'm not saying he's a good defender. I'm just saying they didn't lose games by putting him there.
Yeah, I would tell you that somewhere in there they lost games. That if it always shows up in the data, having him – listen, I like Schwarber. I wanted him back. I'd rather have him over J.D. Martinez as a DH. But why didn't they re-sign him, Jared?
Because he was redundant.
In what way?
He's another J.D. Martinez.
Exactly. A DH. Exactly. A DH. He can't play for
us. I'm not arguing Kyle Schwarber being a first baseman. I'm just saying he occupied that position. He made the team better because he was there. They found a spot for him. But moving forward, when you had a guy like Cassis and everyone was saying, all right, well, if you sign Kyle Schwarber, you bring him back, maybe he can play a little first. He can play a little outfield. He can DH, whatever you need him to do. And then he can take over as DH for JD Martinez. And then I'm sitting here saying, well, you already have JD Martinez and he wants to stay here. I mean, would you make the case that JD Martinez is a more impactful bat than Kyle Schwarber? I'd say it's pretty close, and I would lean towards JD because of the impact that he can make on other hitters. I mean, look at Rafael Devers.
Yeah, I don't buy into a lot of that JD Martinez as teacher kind of stuff, because if that were true, then other guys in this lineup would be hitting this year, and they're not. So I like Martinez as a hitter. What I would tell you is I'd rather have Schwarber for the next 4 years had they signed him. And I'd have moved on from J.D. Martinez now. But that is neither here nor there. I'm just telling you, they had a need at first base, and they didn't fill it. Okay? They got the lefty bat, but they had a need at first base, and they didn't fill it. Don't go anywhere. We'll wrap it up with Jared Karabas of DraftKings when we come back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hey again, welcome back to the Baseball Hour. Jared Karabas of DraftKings joining us to give you a quick update on the Red Sox. They are ahead 2-1, entering the bottom of the third over at Fenway Park. Nick Pivetta on the mound. Sacrifice fly by J.D. Martinez, who knocked in Rafael Devers, who had tripled in the first inning. And also Xander Bogaerts with a solo home run to give the Red Sox a 2-1 lead. The Astros had scored in the top of the first on a leadoff home run by Jose Altuve. So, again, Jared Karabas is with us. Jared, do you have any parting thoughts here?
You know what, Tony? I heard you talking earlier saying that, you know what, this Red Sox team, they got pasted. I actually laughed out loud when you used the word pasted last night. But you mentioned the point that they've been playing better for the last week. So I'm going to take the positive route here. And I'm not going to say that anything negative because they lost one game. If the Red Sox hold on and win this game tonight, they still win this series against a red hot Houston Astros team. This season, Tony, it's not over yet.
Well, I agree with you. It's not over. Again, they win this, I'll feel better about them too. You win two series in a row, something they haven't done all year. I'm just telling you that. When you dig yourself that kind of hole, last night was a reminder that it takes a little while to dig yourself out. So, nonetheless, if they win the game, Mariners come in here next, right? Seattle Mariners in here next?
Yeah, not playing good ball.
Okay, you get an opportunity there to win another one, maybe build a little bit of momentum. I do. I feel like they've played better in the last week. I'm just worried about the hole that they've dug for themselves. Anyway, Jared, thank you as always. All right, we'll catch you next week.
I'll see you in person next week, Tony.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.